The House Workforce Committee will come to order. We have a forum. Can I have a member move the minutes from February 21st, 2024? Chair Assad moves approval of the minutes. People in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Minutes are adopted. First bill on the committee is House File 3386. House File 3386 will be laid over for possible inclusion in an anonymous bill. I believe there is an author's amendment, the DE1 amendment, which Chair Dr. Flynn will move.
So moved.
If Representative Finke can explain the amendment.
Thank you, Chair Zhang, and Representative Becker Finn for moving our DE. The DE is just tightening up the language a little bit as we move forward to get a bill in the shape we're looking for.
Okay, all those in favor of adopting DE1, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and amendment is adopted. Okay, Representative Finke, to your bill. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you so much, Chair. This being my first time in the committee, for the record, my name is Lee Finke. My pronouns are she, her, hers. I'm very excited to...
Finke, sorry to interrupt you. The first time you come to a committee, you're supposed to bring treats.
Oh, yeah. I was told that once, and I was like, I'm not going to do that. It's a new era.
You're good, Representative Finke. We have too many treats around here, so.
Yeah, I'm sure we can find you some. I got Girl Scout cookies. So thank you for the time here. This is a bill that is seeking $1 million. It's going to, essentially, this is follow-up work for the trans refuge bill that we passed last year. We have indicated that we are going to be a state that supports people who are looking for gender-affirming care, whether in-state or out. We put out that call. People said, okay, we're coming. And this is just a small amount of money that we're looking to help create a soft landing for people who are here for that reason. This money will go to people who are either looking to provide gender-affirming care or are coming here for the reasons of needing gender-affirming care for their families and want to, when you uproot and move your whole family, sometimes you need a little help getting into your new life. So that's all. It's $1 million. It would go a long way for our small community. And those are my opening comments.
Thank you, Representative Finke. I see you do have some testifiers. So if a testifier can come to the table, please identify yourself for a record and share your pronouns if you would like and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Zhang and members of the committee. My name is Aaron Zimmerman. My pronouns are he, him, and I'm the executive director of PFUND Foundation. PFUND Foundation has a 36-year legacy as the LGBTQ plus community foundation serving our individuals, families, and organizations here in Minnesota and across the Upper Midwest through scholarships for students and grants for small businesses and nonprofits. PFUND Foundation has awarded several million dollars over our history and utilizes a community-driven review process. Our foundation is truly for and by LGBTQ plus communities. Last year's passage of the Trans Refuge Bill was a critical step forward to protect healthcare providers and patients. We've seen firsthand that people from all across the country are moving here to seek safety, refuge, and a better life for themselves and their children. Since the trans refuge law passed, PFUND has convened and surveyed LGBTQ plus people and providers of gender-affirming care across the Upper Midwest to identify our community's biggest challenges and needs. Data from a community survey shows in the first 6 months of the trans refuge law, over 150 LGBTQ plus individuals and families have or are soon moving to Minnesota to seek refuge. Additionally, 89% said that they need gender-affirming care. Across all our listening sessions, surveys, and convenings, access to affordable and affirming health care and economic insecurity were consistently the top challenges. This bill addresses those top challenges by dedicating funds to expand Minnesota's gender-affirming care workforce, supplying health care facilities with the funds they need to hire, train, and support providers in this field. Providers will then have the job skills necessary to deliver high-quality, competent, and affirming care for hundreds of patients in need. We estimate that we could add 7 or more trained gender-affirming care providers over 2 years, and each new provider could result in 250 more patients treated each month. This program could attract more providers to work in Minnesota, creating high-paying jobs, and help Minnesota continue its legacy of being a leader in healthcare. House File 3386 also begins to address the increased risk of economic insecurity that LGBTQIA2S plus people experience compared to the general population. Funds from this bill will be used to provide wraparound services that help individuals get job ready, create pathways out of poverty, and address the many disparities that prevent LGBTQ plus people from achieving economic security. The Trans Refuge Law was a positive and necessary step to protect healthcare providers and patients, but we know there is more work to be done in Minnesota to truly be a refuge for LGBTQ plus people, especially as more people move to Minnesota and pressures on our healthcare system and nonprofit organizations increase. As a trusted community partner and expert in grant making, PFUND Foundation is well equipped to efficiently manage grant funds and deliver for LGBTQ plus communities. We ask for your support and partnership as we continue to make Minnesota the number one place in the country to get health care, do business, and raise a family. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Aaron. Next testifier is Dr. Angela Katie Jupper. Please identify yourself for the record and share your pronouns if you would like. Welcome to committee.
Thank you so much. I would have brought treats, too. Thank you, Chair Zhang and committee members. My name is Dr. Angela Cade Gepford. I use they, them pronouns. I'm the Chief Education Officer and the Medical Director of the Gender Health Program at Children's Minnesota, where our team is committed to providing high-quality essential health care for transgender and gender-diverse youth. I'm here today to express my support for House File 3386, which would increase access to this essential health care for families currently living in Minnesota, as well as families who are moving to our state. You heard from Aaron Zimmerman about the survey that his organization did. In 2023, the Gender Health Clinic at Children's Minnesota saw a 30% increase in new patient calls as states around us began to ban or restrict access to this essential care. While moving to Minnesota is a hardship for families coming here to get care, they come here hopeful that we'll be ready to welcome them with open arms and give them the health care that they need. The problem is that our arms are already incredibly full. Prior to the passage of the Trans Refuge Bill, our waiting list at Children's Minnesota was already over a year long. Our team at Children's and our colleagues in the Twin Cities who specialize in this essential health care are outmatched by the demand for our services. While the Trans Refuge Law was an important first step in protecting essential health care for transgender and gender diverse youth, it's now vital that we improve the access to this care. What I like about the approach that this particular bill takes is that it's using expertise we already have in the medical community here in Minnesota to thoughtfully expand appropriate high-quality care according to well-established clinical guidelines. So this in-depth apprenticeship approach leverages expertise in care systems to increase access without sacrificing high-quality, excellent care. This investment in healthcare infrastructure will improve health outcomes, particularly mental health outcomes for transgender and gender diverse youth in Minnesota, while at the same time attracting new families to the state who bring with them workforce skills. As a pediatrician, I already personally am aware in the first 6 months of this year of a pediatric endocrinologist, pediatric anesthesiologist, and thank God a pediatric child psychiatrist who have all moved to Minnesota directly because of the Trans Refuge Bill to bring their families to this state. They'll bring those workforce skills, financial resources, real estate investment, and contribute to our great culture of inclusion in Minnesota. We live in a country where far too many transgender youth are harassed and scared to engage in their daily lives as their authentic selves. I'm proud to live in a state where we acknowledge that all young people deserve to be their authentic and wonderful selves and protect their legal right to access this essential health care they deserve. But it's time to take the next step. It's time to make good on the promise that we made and make room in our arms to embrace the families that need us. It's time to make sure that transgender and gender diverse young people get to move beyond survival into the beauty and joy of fully thriving as the gifts I know them to be to us, to the families, and to the great state of Minnesota. Thank you, Representative Finke, for your leadership, and committee members, thank you for your attention and your time.
Thank you to the testifier. Representative Finke, do you have any other testifiers?
No. That's it. Yep, that's it.
Okay, we do have member questions. Chair Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. And not a question, but a comment, I think, you know, important for the record to just reflect that I think the good thing about this bill is that it's both helpful in bringing, you know, highly educated, highly skilled people into our state, which is what we should want. But also on the other end of the spectrum, you know, there are folks, I mean, if you can imagine, you know, being forced to leave your home, you know, it's expensive to leave a job. You know, I think if you are not close friends or family with someone who has a child who is trans, I think a lot of folks don't realize how dire it is in this country right now, where they're literally making it a felony for you to properly parent your own child. And so there really are people who have to pick up and leave and come to places like Minnesota so that they can safely just continue to love and care for their kids. So I think anything we can do to help support those people and make sure that they have the tools that they need to be successful when they get to Minnesota is critically important. So thank you, Representative Finke, for bringing this forward. And again, I think it's one of those things that's just sort of happening in the dark if you aren't part of the queer community or not really trying to pay attention to it. And so I'm glad that we're talking about it today. So thank you, Chair Zhang, as well.
Thank you, Chair Baker Finn. Next is Lee Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is, you know, quite an interesting bill in front of this committee. And I think what I'm having a hard time with is understanding, I think, maybe Representative, why it's in this committee and not a human service committee. It sounds like it's about medical support services, mental health, and I understand that. I don't understand the queer community like you had mentioned, you know, Representative Becker Finn. I'm trying to understand why this is in workforce. And, you know, $1 million is a lot of money. You said it wasn't very much money. It's a lot of money to me. And I think that we are, you know, the ink isn't even dry off last year's bill to do a lot of things that Minnesotans are still kind of getting their head around. And I'm struggling with why is this in this bill when we've got so many needs like in mental health and concerns that my constituents are saying, you know, we didn't have enough. We got cuts in our reimbursements and SUD and mental health support. So I'm struggling with why it's here in workforce when I think when people are moving to the state, We are already wanting to give them money or to help them some way before the ink's even dry. They're coming our way, and yet we've got so many other needs. So I'm struggling, Representative Finke. Why is it in this committee? Help me maybe with that part of it, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative Baker. It's a good one. It's an important one. This is not a mental health bill. This is not a substance use disorder bill. It is a bill about helping people in the workforce. People are coming, people were coming. The reality is we have a new influx of individuals coming to the state of Minnesota who need workforce support. This is in this bill because this is a workforce committee. That they may be doctors or that they may or may not provide certain jobs is that doesn't to me declare that it's not a jobs-related bill. We do have, $1 million is a lot of money, especially for a community of our size. And I think that the idea that we are helping people with jobs and workforce support is why it's here, that they may or may not be parts of our community is irrelevant to what this money is going to do. This money is going to do this because we have people coming into the state of Minnesota. We support people when they move to the state of Minnesota to have a soft landing, to have the resources that they need to get here. And when they're here, they can find support and find work. But it isn't necessarily about what that work's going to end up being. And with an organization like PFUND, we'll be able to make sure it goes directly to the need that is being served. If you'd like, I can bring up PFUND to more directly answer that question. But this is not a bill that serves the mental health issue. This is a jobs-related bill.
Representative Zulesnicker.
Well, Mr. Chair, can I follow up, please?
One more question. Representative Baker.
Oh. Well, that's how it is. Okay. I thought I could have a dialogue.
We have other members here on the list, too.
I thought it was still okay. I get it. Thank you. The DE1 is mentioning other wraparound services. That's why I brought this up this way. Again, it sounds like you're supporting people moving to Minnesota that are possibly doctors and people who will be in the medical world to help folks with this type of procedures. And again, I would think that they're fairly highly professionals and doing well. Is that where this money is kind of going for, to help those, that level of new residents perhaps? I mean, we're assuming a lot here. You're assuming there's a lot coming and there's a few, and you're assuming what they need is for supports. I'm just trying to get my head around, and so maybe the person that came up from there can help understand this a little bit better. So thanks.
Representative Mankey.
Yeah, I would love to have Aaron, you go ahead and take that.
Thank you, Chair Zhang. The idea is that as folks are coming here, we want to make sure that they're productive, engaged members of the economy. We want to make sure that they are job ready, that when they're moving, which many folks are moving all across the state. They're not just coming to Minneapolis and St. Paul, because they're coming here from Texas, from Florida, from Missouri. They are wanting to land in places all over the state. And so really investing in them so they can get embedded into the local economies is really the focus, with a real emphasis on driving home the increased need in gender-affirming care. So really investing in medical providers and in the healthcare workforce.
Representative Esker, you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative. My question is more a question about how we assure equity when we're supporting this question of those coming into Minnesota needing jobs, when we have existing, they would be non-Minnesotans coming into Minnesota, supporting them needing jobs. How do we assure equity when we have so many at our committees have so many needs for existing Minnesotans? We have behavioral units. We have trying to place people in prisons. We have people in hospitals we're holding. We have so many issues for our existing people. And I guess my question is how we're going to have equity between the disability groups, the rare disease groups, the veterans. There's so many people that need assistance at various levels. And my concern is how we assure, for as a committee and a legislative body, how we're going to have equity for numerous levels of concerns that I see. So that's my question.
Representative Pinky.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Rep. Zeleznikar, for the question. I think it's an important question, and I think one of the most common things that I hear at the legislature across every single committee is that we need workforce. And I think that one of the things that people are missing about this bill is that this is going to drive workforce. People are moving to Minnesota because they want to be able to live, but they don't move to Minnesota and become non-Minnesotans. They become Minnesotans, they get jobs, they put their kids in schools, they buy houses, they become a part of our economy. If we are gonna continue to hear about the workforce shortage, and this gets back to Representative Baker's question, the reality of our state is that we need people to fill jobs, and people want to move here. They really do, and it is not an assumption that people will come. We have a dramatic undercount of how many people have already moved here. And I think that it's a great opportunity for this committee to recognize how many new workforce members of the Minnesota workforce are coming to Minnesota right now.
Representative Zaleskar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative. I appreciate the follow-up. I guess to your point that I have no question that people want to move to Minnesota. My question is there are many groups with valid needs that want to have funding support to move that could enter the workforce. And as this committee, how are we going to assure the veterans, those that come to me asking for support with rare diseases or in vitro and various things that also would join the workforce, if they had potential dollars allocated for supporting them to do that? And so my question is just more of application of how this committee is going to deal with equity, because there are many classifications I can see that could fit into this bucket of wanting to relocate to this state if X exists. Thank you.
I can answer that question since it's a committee question, and the answer to you, Representative Ansgar, is bring a bill. So I'd be more than happy to hear a bill if it's on veteran issues or anything. Bring a bill to the committee. Representative Finke?
Thank you, Chair. That was going to be my my response. I would love to co-sponsor a bill to make sure that we are making sure all of our communities are receiving the needs that they have. I will just say there are very few committees or there are very few communities in the United States who are less resourced and less cared for than trans communities. The reason that people are coming to Minnesota is because they are not being treated equitably. They are being literally eradicated and erased from their government recognition. They are having their health care removed. Parents of trans kids are now being prosecuted. And the idea that this is we are not just taking an equitable step for a community that is at the very, very bottom of the national investment space of our resources, this is equity. If you're concerned about equity, this is one way that we can make sure we are being equitable, because without Minnesota, literally no state in the upper Midwest, Mountain Range, or Rust Belt would be investing in trans communities. We are the only place that that is happening.
Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Rep. Finke, for this bill. Minnesota is known to be a welcoming state for all, whether you're fleeing from a war, whether you're fleeing from terrible laws made by your state leaders. And this bill, in my opinion, is about addressing workforce shortage. It's about welcoming people to Minnesota, making them feel like that they're part of our the fabric of our society. It's about equity. Let's talk about equity. Trans community is one of the communities that doesn't get their fair share of resources. So thank you, and I thank the community for being here today, and I'll big supporter of this bill. I'm very thankful for your leadership.
Thank you.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I have more comments. There may be a question. But thank you, Representative Finke and testifiers. First, want to touch on the chronic workforce shortage. To me, saying that this brings people from out of state is a really good step with our imbalance in and out migration. We're concerned about that. We have agencies that are doing all they can to encourage workers and people to come to Minnesota, and this is certainly supports that. We help many groups, and I always am going to be moved by an equity argument that's at the core of how I think about my work and our collective work. And if you just look at the bill we passed in 2023, there are so many groups, small groups of distinctly defined people who need a unique and individualized approach and support. For them, for the people we funded, in many cases, it's life-saving. People who are coming, for example, out of incarceration, creating projects and programs that and funding them that meet their needs. And to me, this is saying we have yet another group of people who it's our Minnesota obligation to look out for and give a hand to, as we do so many others. And finally, could you just clarify the ongoing relationship we've had with PFUND so far? Because administratively, as I see it, we're going to provide funding to an organization that we already have a working relationship with, has been vetted, and we can feel comfortable with. Is that correct?
I'll turn it to my testifier.
Testifier.
Thank you, Chair Zhang, and thank you for that question. Yes, we have a really great program that was funded in part by the state called the Equity Fund, which is an investment in small businesses across the state of Minnesota. And that funding, it was an appropriation of $750,000 over 2 years with direct investment in small businesses across the state. So we awarded to 33 businesses, grants ranging from $5,000 to $25,000, and those were really aimed at Greater Minnesota and businesses that were part of the LGBTQ community, and it's been really great so far.
Representative Breyer. Representative Fraser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Finke, thank you for bringing this bill. I'm listening to a lot of the conversation, and I think about historically, we have always sought to develop resources to ensure that when folks that were coming to our state, and particularly coming from places where they may have been persecuted, they may not have had the, they may have had their humanity was challenged. We've set up space and made sure that those folks could be successful here in Minnesota. It has always added a wealth of richness and diversity to our culture here in Minnesota that historically we cannot ignore that. Most of the growth that we've had in this state over the last few years have been from people migrating into the state. In most cases, they're different than what the historical population has been in this state. But it has added so much of a rich diversity to our state. And so thank you for bringing this bill. I'm looking forward to providing resources. This is what Minnesota is about. We are about accepting folks in. We're about making a space for them to be a part of the rich fabric that we have here. So thank you for bringing the bill.
Any further discussion to the bill? Seeing none, I just want to say for those who are concerned, whether this is a workforce bill or not, take a look at the DE1 amendment, look at line 1.6 to 1.9 that addresses your concerns. Closing comments, Representative Finke.
Thank you so much, Chair Zhang, and to the members for the discussion. I really do welcome the discussion. I think it's important for us to recognize what it means to have a diverse, equitable, inclusive state, and I'm grateful to hear that there is interest in that because we do need to be equitable, and we do have a very diverse state in the state of Minnesota. And, you know, I didn't want to talk as much about the community and the harms that we're facing, but to your point, Representative Baker, I said $1 million isn't a lot of money, and I don't mean that unless we look at, you know, if you go west, the next place that's going to spend money on our community is Oregon and Washington. You know, if you go south, there's no one, right? Like, this is a little money in one of the very, very few places in the entire country that is looking out for this community. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to hear from everyone about how we can do that and how we can even help more communities. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your support.
Thank you, Representative Finke, and the testifiers. Chair Becca Fenn will move House File 3386 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion on the bill. Up next is House File 3194. Representative Tackey. Vice Chair Brand will move that House File 3194 be laid over for possible inclusion. Welcome to committee, Representative Tackey, to your bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you very much for hearing House File 3194. Representative Baker and I have been working with Shakopee Chamber on a workforce development pilot for the Shakopee area, and so we're really excited to bring this to you today. And so with this bill, what it will do is partner with local businesses in order to provide more education and workforce development in our area. And so Shakopee and Scott County has no higher education south of the river, and so we suffer greatly from not having that piece. We also have, overall, we have a very low unemployment rate in our area. However, the indigenous community, blacks and Scott County posse members, and those are have significantly higher rates of unemployment in our area. And so we want to make sure that we're getting a way to match the skill sets that we need in our community, and make sure that we are training the folks that need to get training to be unemployed, and make sure that we're supporting our business community and our workers. And we have the chair, the president of the Shakopee Chamber of Commerce, Tim Zunker, here to talk through the bill. Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and share your pronouns as you'd like. And begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Tim Zunker, and I am the president of the Shakopee Chamber and Visitors Bureau, and I serve on the board of directors for the Shakopee Chamber Foundation. House File 3194 will help bridge the skills gap in Scott County while implementing a public-private partnership to create upward mobility with a focus on occupations in demand. By working with the Dakota Scott Workforce Development Board and partner colleges and universities, we will be able to identify these areas of need based off data from the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development, work with area colleges to tailor programming to fit these occupations, and fill these cohorts to create opportunity for individuals. While as Representative Tapke mentioned, Scott County does have a high labor force or higher labor force participation rate than the state of Minnesota. There is an opportunity gap based off demographics. Based off the county profile from Deed, the unemployment rate for individuals who identify as Black or African American is 10.5%, which is higher than the state average of 8.7%. In addition, for individuals who identify as Hispanic or Latino, the unemployment rate is 7.6%, which is higher than the state average of 6.3%. By working with our nonprofit community in Scott County, including MICASA and the Community Resource Center, House File 3194 will allow us to assist in creating better opportunities for the underserved and underrepresented in Scott County. In addition, to better serve the underserved in the county, we are currently working with area colleges and universities in partnership with the Scott County CDA and area businesses to bring training opportunities into Scott County. Since, as Representative Tapke mentioned, we do not have a technical college or four-year university in the county, the bill would help with eliminate, or by working with these colleges and universities, we want to eliminate the transportation barriers and help increase or help create access to quality training and education for our residents. Through our current workforce efforts with the Shakopee Public Schools, the Scott County CDA, through United Way workforce grants focused on our future workforce and other workforce programs, House File 3194 will allow us to expand initiatives to train and retain our current and future workforce in Scott County while providing us the resources to provide additional opportunity to those most in need. A small example of our efforts took place last year during the Community Spirit Night at a concert series our organization hosts annually in downtown Shakopee. During this event, we awarded three scholarships to young individuals with MICASA and a scholarship to one student with Takata Learning Center in Shakopee. Currently, two of these individuals are now getting their teacher licensure to become teachers in the Shakopee School District. This is just a small step in our efforts to train and retain our current and future workforce. Again, I want to thank the committee for the opportunity to testify and ask for your support for House File 3194.
Representative Tackett, do you have any other testifiers?
I do not.
Discussions? Representative Weens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Zunker and Rep. Tapke. Maybe I missed it, but can you go through the particular job skill sets that you'd like to focus on that's in need in your area?
Representative Tapke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Weens. Yes, we have an extremely high number of, especially industrial work in Shakopee, and so we need trade employees, we need industrial employees, and we need to make sure that we are filling the jobs that we have. We have a really high manufacturing. Shakopee has a very large industrial park, and so we have a lot of high skills, really high wage jobs in there that employers are just not able to fill at this time, and so those are the kinds of things that we are really working to train on and help partner with businesses to make sure that we have local jobs available for people that need them.
Representative Weems.
No, thank you very much. Thank you, Representative Tapke and Mr. Zunker.
Lee Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this is maybe a question to the chair. Do we have a budget for the committee yet? Are we looking to spend money this year? I know that we've talked before about just our concerns about Deed and getting their monies out, and they're woefully behind, and we're kind of putting more on it. Is there any indication from leadership what our committee might be looking at for dollars this year?
I will let you know as soon as I hear from leadership. I haven't heard much, as with all committees, we don't know yet. The budget forecast just came out last week.
Right.
And so once I find out, I'll make sure that my staff shares information with you.
Thank you. I know we've got just a couple weeks away from our deadline, so thank you. Appreciate that.
Any further discussion? Representative Tackett, closing comments.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. I just appreciate everyone's work on this. Thank you to the Shakopee Chamber for their support of this really, really great pilot project that we want to move forward. I just want to note, Mr. Chair, that there is a taxes component to this bill. If you look, and we are foregoing that piece after a lot of further discussion, we decided that is not necessary on this bill. So instead of we are not headed to the tax committee, we are just going to we're eliminating that piece from the bill as it moves forward and is hopefully included in a future package for things. So that's the reason why we're not moving to taxes at this time. We're just keeping it here. So I just appreciate everyone's support, and this is something that would be really, really great for my community and supporting the people who need the skills.
Thank you, Representative Tapke. Vice Chair Branham renews his motion that House File 3194 be laid over for possible inclusion. Next is House File 3046, Representative Frazier. Representative Frazier moves that House File 3046 be laid over for possible inclusion. Your bill, Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill presentation is in regards to services provided by Sabathia Community Center. Sabathia Community Center is one of the oldest African-American founded nonprofits in the state of Minnesota. It annually serves about 50,000 South Minneapolis residents, and it tackles barriers in their lives and moves them from surviving to thriving. As a multi-service organization, Sabathia delivers a comprehensive range of community-oriented, culturally tailored services and programming in an environment of dignity and respect. What I can say is, now, I don't particularly live in this community, but I spend a lot of time in this community. And a large part of it is because of community centers like Sabathia is a reason why I can do the work that I do today. Those services that these community centers provide, they actually do help those community members and our residents that they serve go from surviving to thriving. I have the CEO, Mr. Scott Ridd, here to talk more about the specifics of the programs that they're looking to provide resources for. But one of the things I wanted to provide, lay out some context. This is the community with a tragedy that the world continues to watch Minnesota from unfolded. This is the community where George Floyd lost his life. They're still dealing with that trauma. Much of the work that Sabathia does is working with those community members that are still working through that trauma. And the resources that we can provide them will help them to expand those services to help more residents in that area go from surviving to thriving. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll turn it over to testifiers.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and share your pronouns if you like and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Zhang and committee members. My name is Scott Ridd, and I go by he, him, and his. I'm the president and CEO of Sabathia Community Center. Thank you for taking the time today to hear about our bill and our wonderful community center, Sabathia. Sabathia Community Center is a 58-year-old African-American founded nonprofit located in the heart of South Minneapolis. Our mission is to provide people of all ages and cultures with the essential resources to inspire them to improve their lives and to build a thriving community. In 1979, we were able to purchase this 188,000 square foot building that sits on 5 acres of land. And as Representative Frazier said, we're 6 blocks away from where George Floyd was murdered. For decades, Sabathia has been a critical institution to the South Minneapolis community. During the civil unrest after the murder of George Floyd, more than 700 buildings were damaged or destroyed in Minneapolis. Yet our building remained unscathed, not paint, not graffiti, not a broken window. And it's because of we're a trusted community partner. We believe in doing with the community and not to the community. Sabathia is a one-stop shop for integrated community services. We provide workforce training, offer a large food shelf that in 2023 fed over 50,000 people. We provide programming for youth through seniors living in our community, provide housing services for preventing homelessness. We are also home to 28 mostly nonprofit organizations that operate out of our building, including a Montessori school and a health clinic. Each year, over 150,000 people come through our doors. Because we believe in doing with our community and not to our community, Sabathia conducted a community needs assessment to learn from the community what should we preserve, create, or no longer do. Our key takeaways from the community needs assessment included access to careers that can pay the bills and leave a savings, provide training to high meaningful career pathways, develop programs that focus on building wealth, and the community believes that these investments will create a safer South Minneapolis. So our objectives when entering the relationship with the community was to create a safe community space to provide training to our 87% BIPOC community, reduce the number of community members living below the federal poverty guideline, create a living laboratory and workforce training center that leads to family-sustaining careers, create wealth-building opportunities, and with the goal of transforming our community from one that's simply surviving to one that's thriving. The key actions that we took was that we've done our homework. We know we have a solid model that will prepare our community to get and keep a career. We're not interested in helping people find jobs. We're interested in helping people find careers because we know that they stay in those positions and they grow. We've added case management, meaningful career pathways leading to high-demand careers, changing behaviors, and employment connections using our partners and our relationship with our partners. We have completed all the low-hanging fruit. The remaining pieces is to strengthen our impact, which is why we are here before you today. To achieve our goal of transforming our community from surviving to thriving, we need to build out a true learning lab accessible to the community. We know that our residents and our community, they do better when they work in our community, when they're able to have access to where they can walk to in the community and get the support. Extend our career pathways to move from serving 80 participants a year to 200 and increase the number of career pathways offerings in our programming. We also want to hire the team to reach, teach, and support participants on this pathway to self-sufficiency. By making this investment, we will accomplish our objectives and meet the community demand to move from surviving to thriving. Lastly, I want to thank all the partners who have worked with us, and you can see we have a great number of folks that support us in helping us do this work. It was truly a village approach, and for that we are grateful. There's a lot more I can say about our efforts, but in the interest of time, we wanted to keep it brief. We appreciate your time today and hope you will consider supporting the community's effort to build back better and beyond the session. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Next, we have Rondell Parker. Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and share your pronouns if you like. And proceed.
Rondell Parker. My pronouns are he, him, his.
Welcome. Proceed.
Thank you. I feel like Sabathany, if they're able to extend this, it'll be great for youth like me. When I first signed in for the program, I didn't take it quite as serious, but I realized the opportunity that I had before me, and I can, you know, go with this as a career, build a career. I looked up the career paths and stuff, and I feel like it'll be great. And I know there's more youth out there like me that's looking for a career, that's just not looking for a job, and it'll be great if they can extend it to more people. And you know, and I want to come back and do great things in the community, in the Southside community, and I'm looking forward to seeing how Sabathany can grow in this. So, yeah. I'm nervous. I'm sorry.
You're doing good. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Next is Jacqueline Carpenter. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and share your pronouns if you'd like, and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, I'm Jacqueline Carpenter. I'm the Vice President of Twin Cities Rise, a collective impact partner to Sabathany. Our intentions today are to not only recognize the value this organization brings to Southside, but to the broader community and metro area. Serving 50,000 families in our community is just scratching the surface when we talk about moving from survival to thriving. Our partnership includes not just referrals of service, but to continue to advocate and support their efforts and growth. Going from 50 to 200 in workforce development is going to take a little bit of effort, and that's where we come into play for the collective impact partnership. Our goal is to bring in emotional intelligence training through the leadership of Scott Redd. To do that, we're addressing the needs of the community so the thriving is actually achievable. People can believe in themselves and find hope. This is a community that is still healing. They're coming and rebounding out of a crisis. We recognize that, so we need to help address the trauma, but also address the hope. And we can do that with our emotional intelligence training. We've proven that for 30 years. And Scott's partnership is a really wonderful way for us to extend that ability and that care for the community that needs us so desperately. So we're very proud to be a beacon of hope and stand in partnership with Sabathany. We recognize the growth and the support and the resources are needed. And I'm proud to be able to testify for the reputation of this wonderful organization.
Thank you. Representative Frazier, do you have any other testifiers?
No.
Okay, discussions. I see we have Representative Weems.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Frazier, Mr. Redd, and also Mr. Parker. Thank you for that testimony. Just in research, your charitable giving ratio is extremely high. And other committees that I sit on, when we take a look at all the different things, the effectiveness, not only cost effectiveness, but effectiveness in job placement or whatever the metric is we're looking at, one of the things we look at is the charitable giving ratio. So we know that when we give you money, that you're out on the street doing the things that you said you're going to do. So my question for you, Mr. Redd, is you talked about your workforce strategy. Can you, and you want to place people in the community, can you describe the different skill sets or job placement that you focus on mainly?
Sure. Good at this so far.
Thank you, Chair John. We're really looking at clean and green careers. So if you look at this list of partners that we have, well, Xcel Energy, they provide line worker positions, right? And that position is starting off at like $70,000. We have home energy auditors positions, and this is what through our Environmental Sustainability Academy, which Mr. Parker is going through, you know, people are coming out with $50,000 to $60,000 with just, again, a high school degree. So we're really looking at those pathways. There's high demand industry positions, and we believe we have the partners, and we want to continue to grow those partners in those positions. So we're looking, again, we're not looking for those jobs that's, you know, $20,000 to $30,000. We're looking for the jobs that can really sustain and help folks pay their rent or buy a house and then inspire them to move forward and to be able to be promoted and progress in their career.
Representative Weems.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay. Thank you, Rep. Frazier, Mr. Redd, Mr. Parker. Thrive.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Carpenter, I was struck by your mention of emotional intelligence. As a leadership coach, it's been one of my main tools working with people on that. And I don't really have a question, it's more of a comment, but to me, I mention all of that because I'm impressed by the combination of going to the fundamentals of who a person is, how they feel about themselves, where they need to develop or where they might be overusing a characteristic in a dysfunctional way, and you're taking care of those fundamentals of the person as well as giving the skills, and that's such a recipe for success. So thank you.
Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Frazier, for this bill. Mr. Reed, thank you for coming to this committee and bringing the voices of the South Side to this committee. This community in Sabathany and near Sabathany area has been through a lot in the last 3 years, trauma upon trauma, and we're still recovering. And I have talked about underemployment many times in this committee, and this is a community that has a lot of high underemployment. People are employed, but they don't have enough to buy groceries sometimes. They don't have enough to pay the electric bill. But they're employed. So I like the approach of trying to find careers, not jobs, and making sure that people have the necessary tools and trainings to find that career so they can live a life that is successful and lead, you know, in their community. So thank you.
Further discussion on House File 3046. Seeing none, Representative Frazier, closing statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for the discussion. I really appreciate it. I think many of you see what I see in its organization and the conversations that have had that have come up in the conversation. The points that were made is that the work that they're doing can be life-changing for folks that live in this community. And that is the work that we should be about here in the legislature. So I'm looking forward to having further discussion on this bill as we move forward.
Thank you, Representative Frazier, and also to our testifiers, and especially to Rondell Parker for coming in and sharing the story today. Representative Frazier renews his motion that House File 3047 be laid over possible inclusion. Next is House File 3537. And I believe Representative Frazier is also going to fill in for Representative Santamaria, who is out ill today. So thank you very much, Representative Frazier, for coming to the rescue. Representative Frazier will move that House File 3047 be laid over possible inclusion. To your bill, Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it's my pleasure to step in for Rep. Santamaria, who undoubtedly does wonderful jobs on her bills, and I'm going to try my best to fill her shoes this morning. So thank you all for allowing me the opportunity. This bill is for resources for voter options. Voter Options is an organization focused on mentoring opportunities for our young folks. And it was founded in 1993 in response to a community needs assessment that identified a pressing need for mentoring programs in the Twin Cities. What I can tell you is that that need for mentoring programs that are provided by Voter Option has not been resolved. We still have young people that need and will benefit from great mentors. And personally, I can attest to the very positive impact that mentors have had on my life. But for those mentors who have become lifelong friends now, I would not be here doing the work that I do in the great state of Minnesota. I will stop there with the opening presentation, and I will allow the president, Mr. Thompson, to speak more to the program. And I will say, I met Mr. Thompson probably over a decade ago now. We were in the community at a fundraiser, and I remember introducing myself, and then he said his name, and it sounded as if I should know who he was. So I Googled him after that, and I should have known because I'm a former athlete, college football. He is a great athlete from that played here for the University of Minnesota and then went on to play in other places as well. And he's done great work in his mentoring program at Boulder Options, and I'm glad to introduce him to the committee so he can talk about the program. Thank you. Thank
Welcome
you for your time.
To the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and share your pronouns if you like and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Darrell Thompson, he, him, and Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Again, my name is Darrell Thompson, CEO of Boulder Options, and I've been with the Boulder Options is in its 31st year, and I've been with Boulder Options now for 29 years. Boulder Options is a youth mentoring program for youth 10 to 14 years old. Youth are referred to us by social workers, therapists, teachers, and other professionals. Boulder Options focuses on healthy habits and goal setting. We are a strong foundation for young people who are in seeking bigger, bolder goals. We have been offering one-to-one mentoring for about 30 years, and about 7 years ago, we started offering more structured alumni programming for our kids who have successfully completed our one-to-one mentoring program. 98% of the youth who graduate from our program opt into our alumni program. Our paid professional skills and career exploration program called I Believe I Achieve is for youth that are 14 and older, and there is a waiting list. With more capacity and resources, we can serve more alumni. We've been receiving OJP funding in support of mentoring, of support of our mentoring program, and have a strong track record with that. But we want to build on our relationships and start to serve more youth. We typically manage 100 new pairs every year with our mentoring program. Our alumni program has the potential to reach hundreds, but we need to increase our capacity to do that. We started, as was mentioned earlier, in 1993, about 30 years ago, as a small pilot program. Now we have a one-year program with an alumni program that has benefited over 30,000 youth in the state of Minnesota. Over 420 volunteer hours have been invested in Minnesota youth through Boulder Options. And maybe this is the most important stat that sticks out to me as I was kind of preparing my comments today, is that Boulder Options saves taxpayers dollars. We are a fuel of this economy because one youth lost to a life of crime, lost to a life of crime, is between $1.7 and $2.3 million. Boulder Options is your workforce pipeline. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you to the testifier. Next, I see that you have another testifier, Representative Frazier, and that is Vienna Ching.
That is correct.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and share your pronouns if you'd like, and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and the members of the committee. My name is Vienna Chang, and I'm an alumni of the Boulder Options Program. First, I'd like to thank you for your time today and for listening to my story. I've been with Boulder Options for nearly a decade now, and since then, it's become a door to a very safe space. It's become a place to volunteer, a place to confide, and a place to develop lifelong skills. Through the iAchieve program as an alumni, I've developed skills on learning how to bank with Highway Credit Union and how to network and prepare for interviews like with companies like Medtronic. And with all of those skills combined, I'm now a successful CNA, and I'm earning my degree in nursing at the University of St. Thomas. Again, I'm honored to be here today as living proof that Boulder Options is positively affecting our youth within our communities, and with their support, we can achieve great things. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for sharing your story, Vienna. Representative Frazier, I believe you have another testifier, Christian Gary.
Yes.
Welcome to committee, Christian Gary. Please identify yourself for the record and share your pronouns if you like, and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Christian, and my pronouns are he, him. Hi, my name is Christian. I'm 14 years old and live in Rochester, Minnesota. I'm here to tell you how Boulder Options has changed my life. Boulder Options gave me not only a positive male role model, but showed me how to have fun. No matter what, my mentor was there to pick me up, listen to me, and show me how to do new things. He showed me how to fish, how to set goals, and when I completed a goal, he brought me out to eat to celebrate. He brought me to Olive Garden. I had never been to a restaurant like that before. It was amazing, but most importantly, he truly listened to me. This year, I have embarked on another journey with Boulder Options. I am a part of I Believe I Achieve. The program is teaching me about topics that can help me be more successful when I enter the workforce. I am learning how my strengths, interview skills, writing a dream resume, thinking about what kind of jobs I might want to have, and how I can prepare myself to get those jobs. Boulder Options is helping set me for future success. I thank Boulder Options and my mentor from the bottom of my heart. You were the first people to not only not judge me and my family, but to provide us hope in showing us that someone cares.
Thank you, Christian, for your story and testimony. Do you have another testifier, Representative Frazier?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay, discussions. President Hassan.
No, I just said, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just said everybody loves your bill. That's why I said no one is.
Okay, closing statement.
It's a good bill for a great organization that's doing great work. I think the testimony that we just heard exemplifies the impact that it can have and it will have. And it's vitally important that we can start to scale up and expand these type of programs. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Frazier, and to our testifiers for sharing your stories and the work that you're doing today. And so Representative Frazier will renew his motion that House File 3537 be laid over possible conclusion. Next is House File 3999, and Representative Senator Mira is not here. And so Representative Frazier is going to step in again. And so, Representative Frazier, thank you for saving the morning. Representative Frazier will move that House File 3999 be laid over positive inclusion. To your bill, Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Whatever I can do to help keep the trains moving, I will do it. Appreciate the time again, Mr. Chair, committee members, Vice Chair Brand. This bill is for Greater Minneapolis Council of Churches for STEM training and career preparation program targeting our BIPOC youth. Now, what we know and what the data tells us is that this is the future. These are future careers, good paying career jobs, and we have a need. And we need to be able to create pipelines to fill those needs. And so this is a program that seeks to do that. I do have a testifier here that can speak more to the details of the program and maybe the history of the work that they've done here. And I will yield there and give my time over.
Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and share your pronouns if you like and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Adrienne Dorn. I am she, her, and I am the executive director of GMCC. We were founded as Greater Minneapolis Council of Churches and are an interfaith, multicultural, nonprofit social services agency located in South Minneapolis. For 118 years, the organization has worked to address unequal access to resources and further equity through a variety of programs and services. And for over six decades, we've offered various iterations of youth and family programming. Our current year-round out-of-school workforce development and academic enrichment programming for youth in grades 1 through 12 is called Lake Street Youth Labs. It serves predominantly low-income BIPOC youth and families in South Minneapolis. These services originated with the program at the onset of COVID-19 because the vast majority of our youth in our community come from households with little to no computer access, no high-speed internet, no resources to hire tutors, parents or guardians with limited digital navigation and English language skills, which made distance learning impossible. We were approached by faith and community leaders asking for help, and as a response, we launched a no-cost distance learning support program that served 70 BIPOC youth and simultaneously provided computer literacy courses for their parents. But even when classrooms returned to in-person, varying factors continued to make it difficult for many students to meet academic standards and adequately prepare for the workforce. Lake Street Youth Labs grew into a year-round program that provides out-of-school academic enrichment and career exploration activities that aim to spark interest and build skills in STEAM topics, science, tech, engineering, arts, and mathematics, decrease educational disparities, provide opportunities for career exploration, support social-emotional learning and soft skills training, and prepare underinvested youth for the workforce. Our curriculum is designed and delivered by our roster of experienced classroom teachers and youth workers, as well as partners who have expertise in various subject matters. Since spring of 2023, GMCC has served about 200 youth through its summer and after-school programs, and 88% of those youth are BIPOC. We seek funding now because demand for our programming is increasing rapidly. We have seen an increase in registration for both school year and summer programming. We have successfully secured private and corporate foundation partners and some government funding, but in order to sustain our programming and expand to meet demand, we do need gap funding.
Thank you, to the testifier. I believe you have another testifier, Beck Abdi. Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and share your pronouns if you'd like.
Good morning, Chair.
With your testimony.
Yes, good morning, Chair. Thank you for taking our time. My name is Dak, D-A-Q, last name Abdi. My pronouns are he, him, his, and I'd like to just share a little bit with you. Again, my name is Dak. I'm a youth program manager at GMCC. This work I'm passionate about because I myself benefited from out-of-school programming while growing up in South Minneapolis in a single-parent household. We take pride in offering no-cost quality STEAM programming and workforce development opportunities for low-income families that can't afford to pay for extracurricular activities and academic support. I want to share with you the impact I've seen this program have for our 58 participants last summer. It was their first time at a summer camp. We took weekly field trips, and for their first time at a farm, first time canoeing, and first time exploring the science museum. For many students, it was first time leaving their neighborhood. One 10-year-old who attended our summer camp was disengaged and always seemed tired. But instead of approaching him with discipline, we asked questions and provided opportunities for him to learn, engage, and explore. As time went, I learned that he was incredible at math, and we leaned into this talent to cultivate his math skills. Now he's engaged, alert, and his parents are thrilled that he's in fourth grade, but at a seventh grade math level. I'd like to read feedback that we received from one mother whose three children participate in our programming. My name is Anissa Mohammed. My family's experience at GMCC has been remarkable. At times, I'm surprised by the questions my kids ask me and the facts they quiz me about from things they learned at GMCC. All the staff are knowledgeable, caring, and provide high-quality academic opportunities. GMCC has exposed my kids to opportunities that they would never have otherwise experienced. I'm inspired every day to see these young people who just often need an opportunity to discover and build their skills in order to succeed socially, emotionally, and academically. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Frazier, do you have any other testifiers?
No, Mr. Chair.
See none, we'll move to discussions. Any discussions? Representative Emerson Yeager.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much for bringing this bill. I was really intrigued with the youth labs kind of component of your programming. And so as a former lab scientist and having 3M in my district, and we're quickly becoming a healthcare hub of the East Metro in Woodbury, these are careers that are good paying, highly skilled, and they're really good jobs. And what I found as I was thinking it and listening to your second testifier, he talked about asking questions. And kids, no matter where they come from, all kids have a curiosity and they love to ask questions. And that is what science and STEM is about, is having that curiosity and asking those questions. And so the fact that you're asking the kids questions, you're getting to know them, and then that is getting cultivated. I'm very excited for the brilliant people that we're going to have coming into STEM to help with that workforce challenge as well. So thank you.
Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Zong. My question, I believe, is for the executive director. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm reading your handout. And on the back side, it talks about summer camp, and you have a partnership with the Nye Nature Center, which is a wonderful place. Can you tell me more about what you do with the Nye Nature Center?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We actually have a lot of different partners around the Twin Cities. Nye Nature Center, we will subcontract them to come in and provide some provide curriculum, to deliver curriculum to the youth. There are a variety of other organizations that we do similar things with. Create Minneapolis provides coding courses. STEM Builders provides robotics courses. And we do have programming that, like I mentioned, is designed and delivered by our very experienced educators. But then we also partner with other nonprofits with specific expertise in different subject matters to come in and deliver programming to the youth. And in the case of the Nature Center, they'll come in and the young people get to kind of touch snakes and look at, you know, just kind of like explore, and you can just see them get really engaged and interested in the subject matter.
Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Zong. Thank you for that. The Nye Nature Center is a wonderful place about 5 miles from where I live, and they do offer some wonderful programs, so it's nice to see that you do partner with them. So thank you.
Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Rep. Frazier, or Rep. Sansomura, for bringing this bill. The Southside is represented well today here. This is another program in my district, another wonderful opportunity for young people to experience things that they can't experience otherwise. And STEM is the future. We need young people engaged in these activities that will eventually land them in a good job. And also, like, fulfill, like you were saying, fulfill their curiosity about the world. So thank you for bringing this bill, and thank you for the work that you do in the community.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for, you know, bringing this bill forward today. And I think, you know, one of the things I think most of us legislators have done is gone on tours of different things, and I think it's, you know, helps expand our worldview outside of our district and our constituents. And I think, you know, when we look at organizations like this and the opportunity that you're giving to youth, just helping to expand their world. And, you know, and I think especially when you're young, your mind is so much more open to things. And I think, you know, just seeing the opportunity that they have available to them and that they most likely don't know about. And I think it's such a wonderful opportunity for them, and you know, thank you for bringing this bill. And you know, it's great to see so many community partners that are working with them as well. And I think that's says a lot about the organization and who's working together to really enrich the lives of these youth and give them richer opportunities in their life. So thank you.
Representative Page.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just say I had the pleasure of presenting these two bills for Rep. Senator Murray today, and it really I'm probably going to be reflecting for the rest of the day. Now, I grew up on the South Side, but not in this state and not in the city of Minneapolis, but I am a South Sider from the South Side of Chicago. And so when Rep. Hassan continued to say the South Side, I'm blowing over here because I'm thinking about my South Side. But this is a combination of the institutions that had an imprint and impact on my life that put me on a positive path, from the churches, from the mentoring programs to the community centers. That is why I was able to stay on track and not get caught up in things that would have put me in other places. And so I am thankful to be able to have the opportunity to present these bills and to also help get resources to organizations that are doing the work here in the state of Minnesota. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Representative Frazier renews his motion on House Bill 3999 be laid over positive inclusion. Seeing that there is no more other items on the agenda, the committee is adjourned until next week.